Hi, I'm Brian McCreath, and this is The Answered Question from WCRB in Boston for January 27th, 2017. This is a podcast about creativity through music, featuring the performers you hear each weekend on the radio and online at WCRB. What you're hearing is a little slice of Prokofiev's first symphony, the Classical Symphony, as it was performed last Saturday by the Boston Symphony Orchestra and conductor Juanjo Mena. He was the guest on last week's podcast, and you can hear this performance on demand at our website, classicalwcrb.org. It was part of a concert that also included Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony and the violin concerto by Mieczysław Weinberg with soloist Gidon Kremer. Unfortunately, the Weinberg is not available to hear on demand because of restrictions imposed by the publisher, but you can hear that piece, and I hope you will, on Monday night, January 30th, during our rebroadcast of this concert. Even the encore Gidon Kremer played on Saturday was an intensely emotional experience. This week, Juanjo Mena is back with the BSO, taking a program that was initially meant to be led by Krzysztof von Dohnányi, who had to cancel because he came down with the flu. The program begins with the American premiere of a BSO co-commission by British composer Julian Anderson. Then, Jean-Frédéric Neuburger is the soloist in Robert Schumann's Piano Concerto. And capping it all off is the great C major symphony by Schubert, the one usually referred to as number 9. We'll have the concert for you live from Symphony Hall tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And on Sunday night at 7 p.m. on WCRB in concert, Masaaki Suzuki conducts Bach cantatas as well as works by Handel and Vivaldi in performances presented by the Celebrity Series of Boston and Boston Early Music Festival. On this podcast, you'll hear from Masaaki Suzuki in a preview of that broadcast. First, though, is the soloist in this week's BSO concert, Jean-Frédéric Neuburger. If you follow the BSO closely, that name may ring a bell. He was featured on a concert about a year and a half ago, but as a composer. On this visit to Boston, he's the soloist in Schumann's Piano Concerto, and as we began talking after a rehearsal earlier this week, he had a great way of describing that piece.
Schumann is a great piece. It's a bit the first anti-concerto for me. The first anti-concerto in which the soloist is not there to show his technical ability because there is hardly one place very, very difficult virtuosistic with scales, arpeggio. Everything is mixed with the orchestra. And it's a chamber music-like concerto, and it was, I think, very modern from Schumann as an attitude to write that at that time.
What was it about this concerto that made it the choice for you in this particular concert?
Well, as you know, it was supposed to be Maestro von Dohnányi who conducted this concert. So the choice came both from both of us, Maestro Dohnányi and me. And we had performed before with Orchestre de Paris, Beethoven, and we had a meeting to study the Schumann concerto together. So in a way, I must say that I am influenced by his approach of Schumann, and I'm very happy of that because he is a great Schumannian. And of course it's bad news that he had a flu and he could not be there. But I'm very happy to be there to perform with Maestro Mena.
You are someone whose life is in that rare category of having two very major roles to fulfill as piano soloist and as composer. Tell me about how that balance works for you personally.
Well, it was mixed for me. Those two activities were very mixed since the beginning, because my way to approach the piano was improvising, and to already to write little piano pieces. So I always had this music in me, and now I try to find some time without concerts sometimes to be focused only on it, to work on my works, my compositions. So it is quite easy because twice a year I have 2 months without concert in which I only focus on composition. And the rest of the year, so it means 8 months on the year, I perform, usually in France and also in US, in Japan, and some other countries. But in the same time, I can always continue to work on my pieces, even if a bit slower than if I do only that. And it is very important for me to perform music by a contemporary composer. I do a lot in France. I do not a lot here in the US, unfortunately, but in France I do a lot. And this is, for me, very mixed because the fact that I am also a composer makes that I try to understand the composer approach very much, and many of composers are my colleagues and my friends. This is very important, and I think indispensable for every musician.
And does that same approach apply when you do something like Schumann? Do you look at it sort of what was the composer doing in terms of the craft?
Well, I think everybody does in a way very different, you know. Of course, it's very important to study the relationship, for example, in a concerto between the piano and the orchestra, how it is built. Is it theatrical? Is it chamber music? Is it more antiphonic, like responsorial, thing like that? There is many ways to, is it more bel canto, like in Chopin? Is it, and Ravel is symphonic. Ravel is very symphonic. The two concertos are a bit like symphonic, especially the left hand one. And I think that every concerto has his particularity. And this is very important. I think when you go on stage and you are doing something like chamber music or symphonic or theatrical, it's different, very different, like as an attitude. And what I was speaking about, the anti-concerto, I think that is very important for Schumann. It was a bit true for the fourth of Beethoven already, but not as far, because in the fourth of Beethoven, you still find in all his concerto a passage of virtuosity, scales, arpeggio, feel like that. But this is my approach, and of course, this, we talk with that with Maestro Donani too. And also, I think about metronome marks in Schumann, as in Beethoven, it's very tricky because, as you know, composers vote metronome marks on the score to show the tempo. But sometimes some performers does not respect exactly, because sometimes also it's difficult to, you know, it's very different when a composer hear it in his mind without playing, he can hear it faster. Yes, and he writes fast tempo. But when you are with the sound of the instrument, with a full orchestra, I feel like that, then it grows up, there is reverberation in the hall, and it cannot be that fast sometimes. That's the eternal problem of choosing the tempo. And for example, in the Schumann last movement of the concerto, I think it's quite important to take a steady tempo, not too fast, if not everything mixed there, and we cannot hear everything more.
Yeah. Now, the thing about the Schumann is that it also, there's one thing about it that maybe you can relate to as a composer. Schumann originally wrote the first movement as its own piece of music. And have you studied the fantasy as it was known? And does that play any role in your understanding of Schumann as a composer?
About the fantasy for piano and orchestra, what is incredible, in my opinion, is that we can hardly imagine that there was 14 years. Actually, of difference time between the time he wrote the fantasy and the time he wrote the second and the third movement. 14 years doing all the activities, composing other pieces. But when we hear the concerto, the whole thing, we can hardly imagine that. And also it is because, in a very technical way of composing, he used the same patterns, the same motivic patterns of four notes. I will just sing do di da 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 di do di de do do di. This is the first movement, and the second movement, 14 years later, he begins like da di do re da da di do. So we have four notes da di do re that we had in the first movement, da di do di de. The same thing. It gives the whole thing an unity by this very simple choice that he made to relate the motif, the one with the others.
Fantastic. That's great. What a nice little insight. That's wonderful. Jean-Fergus Neubourger, thank you very much for some time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much to you, Brian. Thank you.
Jean-Frédéric Neubourger is the guest soloist for this week's Boston Symphony program, which WCRB will broadcast live from Symphony Hall tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And you'll be able to hear the Schumann Piano Concerto and Schubert's Great C Major Symphony on demand beginning next week at classicalwcrb.org. On Sunday at 7 p.m. on WCRB in Concert, we'll bring you a broadcast we first aired last spring, featuring performances led by Masaaki Suzuki. He was in Boston twice in 2015, first at the Boston Early Music Festival, where he conducted a group made up of students from the Royal Academy of Music in London and the Juilliard School in New York, and then later in the year in a celebrity series of Boston concert with the ensemble he founded, Bach Collegium Japan. I had the chance to talk with Masaaki Suzuki during the early music festival, and I asked him first about whether he changes the way he conducts or interprets music when he's leading a brand new group.
That depends on the situation, of course. But I have never tried to be different from my idea or my approach to the music. So, but naturally, with the different people, different colleagues, different musicians, that sounds differently. So this time, especially with the students, is a very fresh, and sometimes I can find there's a new idea. This bar sounds something completely new, and so on. So that's really the same thing as the usual professional ensemble. But most of them are the very young and students, but still they do have some kind of experience in the school. And so Royal Academy have in Keynes' cantata series, and the Juilliard 415 is of course they do have a lot of things other than Bach as well. So I'm very curious to see how they react to what I'm saying, you see.
The particular cantatas that you chose for this performance here, the cantata number 75 and the Ascension Oratorio, tell me about the choice of those two specific pieces of music and why it made sense here.
Well, the one reason is according to the church year, so the both of them are really appropriate for this period, and especially number 75, the Alien in Zoll und Essen, is one of my favorites because this is the first cantata ever for Bach in Leipzig when he arrived there. And the very beginning of the cantata, that's a really shocking beginning. So that's, I can't imagine how shocking it was at that time, because you see that everyone expected him to something to very solemn, something very authoritative, as a very famous Bach came to us, and then everyone expected something very you see, that's a very, very heavy church music. And then comes he started this music, yabam, pah, and overcomes the solo. That's really almost a heart attacking effect, I think.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, so this describes quite much what kind of nature he had, actually. So, I like this kind of way to surprise the people, and also this is a very, very expressive phrasing, and also arias are also very beautiful, and especially this is divided in two parts, and the second half starts with the sinfonia together with the chorale played by trumpet, slide trumpet. So this is also very interesting structure. So, simply, I love this piece very much.
To put it in a nutshell, yes.
Yeah, yes.
The Ascension Oratorio involves, Cantata 75 is much more, we might say, conventional in the arrangement of chorales, arias, the way that it reflects text. But the Ascension Oratorio is more storytelling.
Yeah, yes.
That's so I wonder if that affects the way that you conduct that piece.
Yeah, that is a little similar to the East Oratorio. And also we have Evangelist and as a storyteller, and also very beautiful reaction from the people around the Jesus Christ who was going up to the heaven. And it's very nicely depicted the feeling of the people at that time. They didn't have any idea what was happening there. Jesus Christ was going up and up. I think this is a very interesting scene in the Bible, and music depicts this scene very well. So
it does, and also the sense, not just of the scene as it happens, but the sense of what the emotion
of
the believer when that happens.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a more or less the same, similar as in Passion or any other oratorio. This is the evangelist telling the story, and in between comes the reaction of the people from inside, and also the believer's reaction. So I think it's very, very interesting.
Yeah. This year marks a very important milestone. At least it seems to me, I don't know if you feel this way, but it was 20 years ago this year that your first Bach cantata recording was released.
Exactly, yes.
And now the set is complete.
And also 25 years since our foundation.
Since the founding of Bach Collegium Japan, an amazing quarter century.
Yeah.
And it's been this long. I wonder when you look back if there's anything that you would have maybe done a little bit differently, not specific interpretations, but looking at a whole project, if you knew that you were going to get through this whole thing within 20 years, is there anything you would have done differently?
Well, basically, same, I think. My approach to the Bach's music didn't change so much. But, of course, the people have changed, the members have changed, of course, and also we all were getting older and older, so of course, well, we can do the same thing over again, of course, but the time to time I have to listen to the earlier recordings a bit for some to make the choice and so on, but, and basically I find it the more or less the same approach to the music, but you know, the more we did, the probably a little deeper and also a little more details we can express, I think. Well, of course, if I would start over all over again, then it sounds completely different.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can imagine that, and certainly the experience of life itself would change about maybe your approach to some of this music. But it seems as though you had a plan from the very beginning.
Yeah,
which is amazing. It's an incredible achievement.
Well, this is very, very interesting because I have never announced or said clearly to complete this series or something. So this is only the intention of the CD company. And actually we have been doing what we wanted, and the we always stick to the Bach's cantata. Now too, still now too. So we are now starting another series according to the theme. So no more recording, of course, but we are still doing the Bach's cantata regularly. So, this is kind of the very, very lifelong project, kind of.
That's Masaaki Suzuki in a conversation recorded in 2015 during the Boston Early Music Festival. He came back to Boston later in the year with Bach Collegium Japan for a Celebrity Series concert that included a Gloria setting by Handel and Bach's Cantata 51 with soprano soloist Joanne Lunn. I met him again at that time, and we picked up where we left off a few months earlier, talking about the 25th anniversary of Bach Collegium Japan. And I asked him how many musicians have been with the ensemble from the very beginning.
Well, in terms of the orchestra, the old core musicians, like the leaders of, for example, Ryo Terakado, and also the other Japanese violinists, and are the same from the very, very beginning, or even before I started this group. And in terms of the singers, the quite many different faces now, but the only 14 singers or 15 singers from the very beginning. They included my wife, and so I have gotten actually the younger singers later. The singers are, used to be a slightly younger generation than orchestra people, and so that's why the first generation, first members have left us to go abroad or to study further somewhere else and so on and so on. So that's the situation was quite different from the very beginning.
Sure. On the program today are pieces by Bach and Vivaldi and Handel. Mm-hmm. And how different are those composers from one another? Are they composers that you find to be radically different from each other?
Yeah, they're very much different. Very much different, and very still they were more or less contemporaries, and that's very interesting to see. So Vivaldi or Handel, Bach's contemporary together with Bach's music, because especially Handel and Bach were born on the same year and more or less the same place actually in Sachsen, and but still they composed a completely different way, and so their character was completely different. So that's very, very interesting. And Vivaldi is, of course, slightly older, but the Bach got a lot of influence from the Italian concerto style and so on. So in turn, they included Vivaldi and others. And so I think it's a very... well, joyful program, you see.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it looks like a terrific program. And do you have to sort of consciously change an approach when you move from one composer to the other?
Of course, we can never stay same to different composers. So, but that was simply be inspired from the music. So you can never do same thing for Vivaldi and Bach. The scores are completely different. So.
Yeah. No. Well, and speaking of being inspired by music, I saw a picture of you on Twitter from a couple of days ago. You were in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and you had the manuscript for Bach's Cantata number 10 mm-hmm. right in front of you there.
Yeah.
What was it like to, I mean, I'm sure you've seen his manuscripts before, but what does it mean to you to encounter one of these original documents?
Yeah, of course, that is very important for me because nowadays you can see everything on website under the, even from Washington, the Library of Congress, so they put everything on the website and you can page turn, you see, on the website. So the informations are there, but still, if when you see directly how Bach has written this and that slurs or notes and so on, that makes us always some kind of inspired and also different impression from the just information, you see. And so that Cantata 10 is that's one of the most beautiful choral cantatas, and I have seen that the original autograph already on the website, and also I have some copies and so on paper, but that's somewhat different. You see, that you can do that's really really so fresh from the ink of the Bach's pen. So that's
yeah. It must make you feel as though he's a little bit closer to you. As a person.
Kind of impression.
Yeah. You have a new recording of organ works mm-hmm. that I love. I love this recording, partly because you've included one of my favorite pieces, which is the Pièce d'Orgue in G.
It is just my favorite piece of Bach.
I don't know why, I just love it. But how did you choose the repertoire for this recording?
Well, actually, I have long dreamed to make this kind of organ CD because organ is my first instrument, so that's a very great pleasure. And the program consists of most of the famous works, and the Pièce d'Orgue, indeed, that is also my favorite work, one of favorite pieces. And I definitely want that on the disc, and also Toccata and Fuga, indeed, that's one of the most famous ones. That is a request from the company, and of course, I played a very, very, very. I'm more than happy to play that. And other things like the canonic variation on from Himmel Hoch. That's also a wonderful piece. So in total, I just chose by my instinct, the best thing.
Your favorite thing?
Yes.
That's fantastic. I mean, I love that's how you approached it so many times, especially with Bach. We find recordings arranged according to certain organizational principles or timelines or whatever, but when they're just your favorite organ pieces. How did you choose the instrument on which to make the recording?
This is one of the very best organs in Europe, and This in Groningen, this organ is, well, actually, historically nothing to do with Bach, but it sounds now the almost ideal for Bach music, and because you see that it is theoretically or practically not possible to play all the Bach's music on one instrument, because he has so many variations in the composing for organ and so on, and it is very difficult to find a good instrument for his repertory, but this is the way of restoration is also very beautiful, and the sound beautiful, acoustic is wonderful there, and so this is certainly one of my favorite instruments. So that's without hesitation, I chose this instrument.
And did you spend, how much time did you spend with the instrument before recording?
Before recording, together with some practice time and so on, some couple of days only. But I knew that organ, so I had a concert a couple of times before. And also that's very important to have the cooperation with the church and also the people around the church and so on. So they all are so friendly and very, very cooperative. So
it always fascinates me that when organists travel, that they have to get to know a brand new instrument mm-hmm. every time they mm-hmm. go to a new instrument. They don't get to. And so I always wonder how long one really can take to develop a relationship with instrument.
Yeah, if you really don't know the instruments, then you need at least 1 week or 2 weeks, as long as possible, to get used to the instrument and to find the best registration and so on. And the one more thing is the registration of the organ is one of the most important part of the performance or interpretation, but it's for recording is might be a little different for the live performance. So that is this case. I didn't put the registration list here on very on purpose because that doesn't mean so much for the as a general information, because this is for very some kind of. Sometimes a little strange registration, but that worked, I think, for recording.
Well, and all the information is in the recording itself, really. Yeah, so, it turns out to be spectacular. So, with the completion of the cantata recording series, are there sort of new things now to take on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, we are starting the Mozart. We have just done the last year Requiem, and this year we are going to do Mass C minor, and probably we go on with the Mozart Mass. And in terms of my own playing organ and harpsichord, I have almost completed a harpsichord solo work. So there's still 3 projects are missing, but and also I'm now dreaming to go on with organ works as well, because I wanted to play organ first, to record the organ piece first, but I don't know why, but the harpsichord was done first. So now I'm dreaming to start the complete organ works, but this is still my dream, because I have no idea how long I can play while I'm alive and so on. Yeah.
Well, just one more question, and it actually relates to these very topics, that when you talk about doing Mozart works mm-hmm. with Bach Collegium Japan, mm-hmm. does that involve actually your transferring some of your work to a forte piano at certain times?
Well, yeah. Sometimes we need continual instruments as well, the forte piano. But what I'm most interested in is the sacred works. So probably it's with organ, more important, I think. And my musician switch the instruments to the classical style, of course. And the singers technically, slightly easier singing Mozart than Bach, of course. So, I mean, only in terms of the technique, but it's very, very interesting to go on from the Bach to Mozart or whatever the next generation of the classical era, and the aim or purpose of the music is shifted to different directions. So I think that's very interesting to see this direction, and I'm very much interested in doing whatever the along the tradition of the Christian sacred music from Bach or even from before until the Romantic era at least. So the Mendelssohn, we have done a couple of Mendelssohns as well for live concert, but I'm dreaming also to make a recording with the Mendelssohn things.
Very good.
Yeah.
When you bring Mozart and Mendelssohn to Boston, we'll talk more about it then. Good. That's great. Okay. Thank you, Masaaki Suzuki.
You
I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Again, you can hear selections from both of the concerts Masaaki Suzuki conducted in Boston in 2015 on WCRB in Concert this Sunday at 7 p.m. and on demand at classicalwcrb.org. You can subscribe to The Answered Question at iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And you'll also find TAQ at WCRB's Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud pages. Thank you to Jean-Frédéric Noberger and Masaaki Suzuki, as well as the staffs of the Boston Symphony, Boston Early Music Festival, and Celebrity Series of Boston for making these conversations possible. I'm Brian McCreath. Thanks for listening.